Good evening, and welcome to this hearing of the Minnesota House Ethics Committee. I'd like to bring the meeting to order. We are holding remote hearings pursuant to House Rule 10.01. This rule has been posted online and is linked to in our public meeting notice on the House website. Pardon me. All remote hearings will be recorded and live streamed by the House Public Information Services. I've been notified that a quorum is present, but Ms. Sunderland, the committee legislative assistant, would you please take the roll?
Savney.
Present.
Representative Erickson.
Present.
Representative Becker-Finn is excused. Representative Carlson.
Present.
Representative Keel.
Present.
Representative Torkelson.
Present.
That is the roll, and we do have a quorum.
Thank you very much, Ms. Sunderland, and I would like to express the committee's condolences to Representative Becker-Finn and her extended family and thank her cousin, recognize her cousin for his service to the country. A quick review of our remote hearing procedure. Members, you're asked to please, keep yourself on mute when we're not voting or speaking. While on mute, you can hold down your space bar to become unmuted, so long as you hold down the space bar as you speak, you will remain unmuted. The moment you let up, you're muted again. For those who are calling in to the Zoom, you must hit *6 to unmute. If members wish to be recognized, please use the raise your hand function if you're using the app. That's on the bottom of your screen. You should be able to click on the reactions tab on the main toolbar. You should be able to find the raise your hand function there. Click on it if you wish to be recognized. Please do not lower your hand. Committee staff will do that for you so we can assure everyone who wants to speak is recognized. Also, please do not use the other reaction functions, the thumbs up or thumb or clapping, as they disappear on their own and are difficult to track. If you're on your phone, hit *9 to raise your hand, or please email Rachel Ganani at house.mn if you wish to speak, or Brittany.Sunderland at house.mn, the committee administrator and committee legislative assistants. Those will put you in the queue for any questions you may have. Thank you for being patient with us. We will be taking breaks periodically just to make sure we do not miss anything or anyone. Just a reminder, while today's hearing is purely informational in nature, if we meet in the future for official business, we'll be doing procedural motions, approval of minutes, adopting author's amendments, technical amendments via voice vote. We'll continue to roll call each vote that refers any bill to the general register or another committee or takes final proper action. As is always the case, any member may request a roll call on any vote. Today we'll be hearing one presentation from our nonpartisan staff on the structure and makeup of the Ethics Committee, but first I'd like members and staff to do introductions. I think the easiest way to organize this is for me to recognize people as they appear on my screen. I'm Representative Jim Davney, represent District 63A, part of South Minneapolis, and chair of the Education Finance and Ethics Committees here in the House. Perhaps Ms. Ganani?
Hi, I'm Rachel Ganani. I'm the committee administrator. I also am the committee administrator of the Judiciary Finance and Civil Law Committee. This is my second biennium at the legislature, and I'm happy to be here.
Thank you. Ms. Sunderland?
My name is Brittany Sunderland. I'm the committee legislative assistant for both the Ethics Committee as well as the Education Finance Committee. I have been with the House also. This is my second biennium working under Chair Dabney.
Thank you. Representative Erickson.
Representative Sandra Erickson, representing District 15A, which is located in East Central Minnesota. So about an hour and 15 minutes from downtown St. Paul. It includes all of Mille Lacs County, parts of Kennebec and Sherburne. Glad to be here.
Thank you, Representative Erickson. Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Representative Paul Torkelson, representing District 16B, all of Brown County, most of Redwood, and a bit of Renville County. I was afraid I was going to go through the entire day without learning something new, but I did learn that I can hold down my space bar and speak. Thank you, Representative Dabney.
Thank you, Representative Torkelson. As you know, all thanks goes to the staff. That one's Ms. Ghanani. Representative Keel.
Good afternoon. I thank you very much. I am in District 1B, which represents all of Polk County, all of Red Lake County, and almost all of Pennington. District 1A has Thief River Falls, the largest community there. So I'm glad to be here and hope I can hear everything as we travel. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Representative Keel. Then shifting to staff, Mr. McCormick.
Senator McCormick, I'm Director of House Research and staff for the Ethics Committee.
Thank you. Mr. Gehring.
Mr. Chair, my name is Matt Gehring. I'm from the House Research Department also. I staff State Government Finance as well as the Redistricting Committee, and Patrick is our lead staffer for this committee, but I'm here to help out as well.
Thank you. Mr. Sullivan.
Hello, David Sullivan with House DFL Research. I've been at the House for 14 years, and I may or may have not staffed the Ethics Committee that entire time. I'm not sure because fortunately, we've had very few ethics complaints, but I've covered it for at least 10 years, I think.
All right. And Mr. Young. May have thrown Mr. Young for a loop there. Representative Carlson, batting cleanup.
Well, thank you. It's good to be here. State Representative Andrew Carlson, District 50B, which is all within the city of Bloomington, third term.
Thank you very much. So the intent of this evening's hearing is to provide an overview of procedures for the Ethics Committee and the Code of Conduct for members of the body. Members of this committee, those procedures and Code of Conduct were emailed to you as part of the virtual packet, and for members of the public, they're posted on the committee website for those who may be watching at home. We have our nonpartisan staff from House Research here today to walk us through the role of the Ethics Committee and the established written procedures we'll use if we so happen to have an ethics complaint referred to us. Welcome to the committee. Again, please identify yourself for the record, and please begin. Mr. McCormick, I have you first on the agenda.
Mr. Chair, that's correct. Mr. Chair, my name is Patrick McCormick. I'm Director of House Research. The House Research Department is assigned by House rules as staff to the Ethics Committee. We are not staff to members who bring a complaint, and we are not staff to members who are subject to a complaint. We are to this committee only. I am committee staff as HRD Director. Matt Gehring is the staff attorney for ethics, but any one of HRD's attorneys might be assigned to a specific complaint or matter depending on availability or topical expertise. Why do we have an ethics committee? It's important to start by knowing that legislators judge their own behavior and that of their fellow members. Article 4, Section 7 of the Constitution says, each house may determine the rules of its proceedings, sit upon its own adjournment, punish its members for disorderly behavior, and with the concurrence of 2/3, expel a member. This places the constitutional duty of disciplining members on each house. The Ethics Committee exists to be the vehicle for that constitutional duty. The public has a role in disciplining members. The public chooses members through the election process and may choose new members every 2 years. The public also can utilize Article 8, Section 6, which is the recall provision of the Constitution. But discipline of members is reserved for members. The House has established a method. House Rule 6.10 creates an ethics committee and a process for the filing of complaints. complaints must be made by two members under oath, signed, with copies to the member being complained about. The public cannot initiate an ethics complaint, as that would be unconstitutional. But the public can bring complaints to other members who can then decide that they have merit and bring an ethics complaint. When two members bring a complaint, they sign it under oath and deliver it to the speaker. They don't deliver it to the chair of the ethics committee or to a member of the ethics committee. They deliver it to the speaker. So if someone delivers a complaint to you, just hand it right to the speaker. Complaints that go to the speaker have 7 days in which the speaker can review them to make sure they're correctly filed, and then she must forward them to the ethics committee. There are due process requirements that are in our rules, such as the requirement that a member being complained about has to be copied on the complaint and all information attached to the complaint. This is an important fact because the speaker is confidential in delivering the ethics complaint to the ethics chair, and the ethics chair doesn't issue a press release or any comment during that time, but the person complained about can decide, hey, they filed an ethics complaint about me and I'd like to go public. And that is their right. When a complaint comes on a member, the committee conducts a probable cause hearing. In other words, the committee must decide, is there a sufficient evidence of a breach of conduct sufficient to require an investigation? The probable cause hearing must include a public hearing, but the ethics committee can meet partially in private to protect medical records, the privacy of involved members, staff, and public, or to deliberate committee actions. A majority vote, 3 out of the 4 sitting members, results in further action by the committee. Action could be further investigation, perhaps with hired investigators, alternative dispute resolutions, or a recommendation to the body. The ethics committee may make recommendations on complaints if the complaints are brought before the House goes sine die. After the House goes sine die, the Ethics Committee of the Senate has met and issued advisory comments. No House Ethics Committee has ever met after sine die. We could decide that we want to weigh in and provide advisory comments, but that's a determination for the chair and for the members of the committee. Under House Rule 9.01, the Rules Committee promulgates and maintains a code of conduct. The Ethics Committee has input on that code of conduct. The current code of conduct has been in place for several decades and is in your materials. The code is general. Ethics complaints are not limited to the statements in the code. The code persists over time between biennia, so we do not have to readopt it every 2 years. So, we're an ethics committee, and we also have procedures. Procedures are not found in rules, but are in a separate packet of procedures that have been created and adopted over time. And these procedures also persist between biennia. We can discuss them, and we could even change them if we don't like any given part of the procedures. But the procedures are in place. They do not need to be adopted every 2 years. The current procedures are fairly general. And that means that when we get a specific, unique complaint, the chair usually has to adjust the procedures for the specifics. Perhaps the person complaining wants to bring in a video and show a video. Perhaps the person subject to the complaint proposes a different kind of a cross-examination as per rules. Given the situation, the chair adjusts the procedures and communicates that to the members of the Ethics Committee prior to the probable cause hearing. We do have precedents in how to conduct a probable cause hearing, however. The first thing to note is that when the speaker receives a complaint and has 7 days to forward it, that complaint then arrives on the desk of the chair. The chair has 21 days after receipt of that complaint from the speaker to hold a hearing. That's in our procedures. And typically the chair spends some of that time establishing how the hearing will go, kind of communicating with both the people bringing the complaint, the two members bringing the complaint, and the person or persons who are subject to the complaint. And trying to establish a hearing protocol that provides due process to all parties. Some of the due process protections that members have include the right to see all the evidence brought against them, the right to bring counsel, the right to present their own evidence, including testifiers, and the right to cross-examine witnesses within limits. Upon determination that there is an ethics violation, the committee has the ability to recommend next steps to the body. The committee does not have the ability to levy a direct punishment, but only to recommend to the body. That's in accord with the Constitution, which gives that power to all the members of the body. The committee also has powers to pursue alternative dispute resolution, and that can be tailored to the specific complaint and can even be negotiated with the person subject to the complaint. In addition to alternative dispute resolution, the committee may recommend to the body more significant measures, specifically reprimand, censure, or expulsion. Expulsion is the most powerful remedy available. Expulsion requires a two-thirds vote of the body. There are some additional duties that are assigned to the Ethics Committee, in addition to just handling a disposition of an ethics complaint. First of all, the speaker could refer a bill here for review and for action if the speaker chose, or if another committee chose. That would be pretty unusual, but it would have to deal with ethics matters pertaining to members, but it's possible. Speakers have in the past asked ethics committees or chairs to review a particular policy or procedure of the House and give advice. That could happen. But there are some additional duties that are assigned by rule. So, for example, House Rule 6.10 also contains a statement that a violation of confidentiality by a staff member may be referred to the Ethics Committee. That's never been done. And typically, for example, if a member of the staff violated confidentiality, that might be treated as a personnel matter, but it also could be referred to the Ethics Committee for action. A few years ago, we adopted House Rule 2.42. This is a rule that regulates the conduct of lobbyists. Issues with lobbyists may be referred to the Ethics Committee, and a single member may bring a complaint against a lobbyist. But violations are limited to either not being properly registered as a lobbyist, or knowingly, either directly or through a third party, furnishing false or misleading information, or making a false or misleading statement that is relevant and material to a matter before the House. And this is a new rule, and there has been to date no proceedings against a lobbyist. And if there were, we would have to sit down with the chair and discuss methods and procedures of going forward. There are a number of other policies that actually affect all members of the House, staff, or legislators, and that are not automatic to routine reference to the Ethics Committee. For example, violations of House policies on harassment, on use of House materials for election purposes, drinking in the SOB, these are subject to separate remediation, either by House personnel or by the speaker or the head of the Republican caucus. But they may also be the subject of an ethics complaint. And finally, there's House Rule 6.23. This requires House committees to be conducted in accord with open meeting laws and rules. And a complaint can be brought by members, by the public, by anybody. And those complaints are referred to the Ethics Committee. And the Ethics Committee could determine whether to go forward with those complaints. So that is my brief overview for the night. Matt and I are both available for questions or for any clarification.
It looks like Representative Torkelson has his hand raised.
Thank you.
I'm sorry, Representative Torkelson, my apologies.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. McCormick, what's the difference between a reprimand and a censure?
Mr. McCormick?
Mr. Chair, members, the procedures that are before you, if you turn to page 3 of the procedures, on line 3.22, there is a description of reprimand. The committee may recommend reprimand, and that may include various kinds of recompense, making remediation, and then it says censure, and then it says expulsion, but it doesn't go into great detail defining those. I think the intent was that reprimand would be the lowest order penalty that the whole House could bring, and that censure is the higher order, and that expulsion, of course, is the very highest order. In other bodies, when I've looked at this, definitions tend to tie reprimand to a statement that the body does not feel the behavior was appropriate and takes note of that. Whereas censure is a statement that the body feels that the behavior actually violates rules and standards of conduct. And finally, expulsion is a statement that the behavior is so egregious that the member cannot serve any further for the House.
Representative Torkelson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. McCormick, for that information. I just noticed that the action was identical and there really was no definitions involved, so that's very helpful. Thank you.
Representative Erickson, I believe you had your hand up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. McCormick, the censure and the reprimand would be by resolution on the House floor, correct?
Mr. McCormick?
Madam Chair, Representative Erickson, yes, the committee would consider and draft a resolution, and that resolution would be reported to the House floor. And typically, the lead member of the committee voting on the prevailing side,
yes,
would present that resolution to the House floor. There are 4 members. There are 2 alternative members. And in fact, the custom often is to allow the alternative members to come to the probable cause hearing in case they're needed, and in case some sort of a conflict arises out of the testimony, but then to dismiss the alternative members if they're no longer needed prior to deliberation. It takes 3 members of the committee to come to a conclusion. And so there's the hypothetical would be that, for example, that 3 of the 4 members support a conclusion, and the senior member who supports the conclusion is Representative Erickson, because Representative Dabney votes no. Then Representative Erickson would bring the resolution to the floor, would describe and discuss it. The floor can amend. It is subject to amendment. So there can be a debate. Amendments can be offered. The body can reject the resolution, lacking 2/3 vote. The body can amend it and then adopt it.
Representative Erickson?
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Mr. McCormick, how specific does the resolution become as far as content in regard to either the censure or the reprimand?
Mr. McCormick?
Mr. Chair, Representative Erickson, both the rules on custom and usage require that the resolution provide the evidence and proof to support the statement and recommendations. So the resolution has to be quite specific. It doesn't have to include all the evidence. That can be in a separate report to the body, but it has to be specific as to the reason, as to the violations the committee has found, the reasons for the committee puts forward for suggesting this action to the body, and the action requested.
Thank you, Mr. McCormick, and thank you, Chair Dabney.
Representative Torkelson, is your hand up again?
Yes, Mr. Chair, it is.
Certainly. Representative Torkelson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. McCormick, should, and I can't, you know, I know this is very rare, but should there be an effort to actually expel a member and that effort would fail, does the body have the option to censure or reprimand after the failure of an effort to expel?
Mr. McCormick?
Mr. Chair, Representative Torkelson, yes, that the in other legislatures, and the general custom and usage here would be that the failure to get a two-thirds vote for expulsion would then allow amendments to be offered to the resolution to seek a lower penalty, censure, or reprimand. It's even possible that the body could refer the resolution back to the Ethics Committee for possible alternative dispute resolution.
Representative Torkelson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That answers my question. Thank you, Mr. McCormick.
Other questions from members?
Mr. Chair?
Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. McCormick, this is our organizational meeting, so we need to have a motion to either approve or adopt the document entitled House Committee on Ethics Rules of Procedure. Is that not correct?
Mr. McCormick?
Mr. Chair, Representative Erickson, the past custom has been that those procedures stay in place, and the last time they were formally adopted goes back about 8 years. So custom and usage is that the procedures are in effect and that we don't have to readopt them at every given time.
Mr. McCormick, is my memory correct that that 8 years ago might have been a time, the last time that I chaired this committee, and the reason they were adopted is that nonpartisan staff had pointed out there was a comma that was missing?
Mr. Chair, you have a brilliant memory.
Thank you. And knowing Representative Erickson's long years as a English teacher, I thought you might appreciate the punctuation reference. But I believe that was the only reason for the formal motion of the procedures at that time. But Representative Erickson?
Well, Mr. Chair, I have a comma problem with the code of conduct. So your motion was fine. I just thought that a few years ago I requested that the comma in the code of conduct, it is the comma that follows democracy in the first statement, that be deleted, and it never was. So we can talk about that later, I guess.
All right. Let's hope that does not become germane to any ethics complaints against any of our colleagues. Anything else for the good of the body? So members, this was an informational meeting. I believe that it was important for us to gather for nonpartisan staff to review the procedures and touch a little bit on custom and usage of the Ethics Committee. Also important that we do this in a public process so that the public can see that we do have a process for holding members accountable, and that I hope that we, as I think all Ethics Committee chairs hope, that we will not be convening again this biennium. With that, members, thank you all for your service. To Ms. Ghanani and Ms. Sunderland, thank you very much. Nonpartisan staff, thank you for your support. For your teams, we are adjourned. Thank you.